During the communion service last weekend, I started to talk about this man Melchizedek for a little bit, and the fact that how Abraham, once upon a time, had to go out and rescue his nephew Lot. Some evil kings, or a war took place. Lot was living in Sodom, and a war took place. And these kings came in, and they overtook the city of Sodom, and they took Lot and took him away captive. And so when Abraham heard about that, he went out and he trained up and he armed his household, all his servants, and they went out and they went and found his nephew and brought he and all of his belongings, and I'm sure some others with him, brought them all safe back home to Sodom. And it was a great victory that Abraham was involved in. Of course, it was the Lord that provided for that, as he always does. And we talked about how that this very strange and unusual priest named Melchizedek just appeared on the scene. He was the high priest of God and the priest of Salem. And he just appeared on the scene, and he came with bread and wine. And so we were talking about how he used that bread and wine to celebrate the great victory. Something else I wish I'd have thought about saying, too, is that it was a great victory in that Abraham brought Lot back home. But you know, what he did really is that not only did he accomplish a victory over evil, but he also delivered his family from bondage. Okay, remember I was saying that Abraham, what he did there was a type of Christ, and that how he went out and accomplished a great victory, and he delivered his family from bondage and captivity and brought them out safe, and he brought them out free. Well, that's what Jesus did for us, and that's part of the celebration of using the wine and the bread in the communion service, remembering his death and the importance thereof. I started thinking about, though, in my mind, I went back to Lot and Lot's situation and the fact of how he ended up in Sodom. I started thinking about that a little bit after communion, and two other church members mentioned something to me about it also. Apparently, the Lord has put this on our mind a little bit, but I want to talk just a few minutes this morning about Lot's decision as to how he arrived and ended up living in a place called Sodom. When you go to Genesis 13, and by the way, I knew I had preached on this at some point in the past here at Andrew Church, so I went digging through my records, and I looked, and I found it, and it would be 5 years ago in May, so almost 5 years ago I preached on this subject here at Andrew, but I want to go back and revisit that again this morning because it's so important, and it's so relevant to who we are today and the things that we do today, and especially all these young people that God has brought in to Andrew Church. So in Genesis chapter 13, you'll read in here where Abraham and Lot had been down in Egypt because of a famine, and they came out of Egypt, and they came back to the land of Canaan there. And it says in verse 5, Genesis 13, 5, it says, "And Lot also, which was Abraham's nephew, he went with Abram, and he had flocks and herds and tents, and the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle, and the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. And Abram said unto Lot, Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me, and if thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I'll go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes, and he beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. And then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, And Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves, the one from the other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and he pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. You can imagine there's a lot of thoughts here concerning Lot and his choice to move to this area and to take his cattle and to separate from his uncle Abraham. One thing I could gather, as I'm sure we all can, is that whenever Lot originally came out of Ur of the Chaldees, he came with Abraham and Sarai and then Abraham's father, Terah. They all came out. As long as he was traveling with his uncle Abraham and he stayed with him, it seems like life was going pretty good for Lot. In fact, they had run into a famine, and they went and they took their possessions and belongings and they went down into the land of Egypt to ride out the famine for a little while. And when that was passed, they came out of Egypt, and here they come. They're coming back into Canaan's land, where the Lord had originally said, I'm going to send Abraham. The Lord spoke to Abraham, and he told him, he says, you're going to come out from among your people, come out from your father's household, and I'm going to send you to a place that I'll show you, and it was going to end up being Canaan's land. But as you look back and you look at Lot's association with his uncle Abraham, you'd have to say and have to agree with me that everything up to this point seemed like it was going well for Lot, because he has plenty of herds, he has plenty of cattle, he has people working for him that's taking care of his cattle, and life seems to be going well as long as he's with Uncle Abraham. And there they are. Now they've come out of a land called Ur of the Chaldees, and they've made it all the way over to this place called Canaan. Now, we all know, because we're Bible readers, we know Canaan's land is that land that the Lord specifically chose out and designated to give to his favored nation, Israel. So this, we know there's something good about this place called Canaan's land. And there they are. But as life sometimes happens, the Bible says that the flocks of Abram and the flocks and the herds of Lot began to grow and to be so large, and they were so prosperous, it said they could no longer dwell together. There was not enough good pasture land and not enough water, good clean water for these animals to drink. Said they were going to have to separate. It's too many animals in one small area. And so what we find there is that, in a sense, both Lot and Abraham were very wealthy. It says when Abraham came out, he's Abram at this point in the scriptures. God hasn't changed his name yet. He does that later on. But I think for simplicity, I'll say Abraham out of habit sometimes. But Abraham came out. He had a lot of silver and gold, and he had much cattle. He was very blessed. And Lot was blessed as well. And so we find that here's a situation where ordinarily, people think of wealth as being something good, but in this case, the wealth began to be a source of strife in their lives. And so we find that they were going to have to separate. And I find it kind of odd here myself that Abraham gives Lot the choice of, well, which way would you like to go? Which land would you like to have to bring your cattle? Because Abraham is certainly the patriarch of that group. He's the senior member, and he would certainly have the right and privilege for him to choose, and he would just tell Lot, I'm going here, Lot, and you're going to go over here. You go this way. Take your herds. But he didn't. He offered it to Lot. That's just the way Abraham was. You know, Abraham was described as being the friend of God. He was a very godly man, and I guess you would say the father of the nation of Israel, in terms of the scriptures here. But did you catch what Abraham said? He says, let us separate so there won't be any strife between our herdsmen. He says, for we be brethren. In other words, Abraham is acknowledging the fact that we are blood kin family. And he says, we are brethren. He says, there should not be any strife between us, especially because we're brethren. You know, I think that a lot could be said in terms of the Lord's church in the same way. Because we be brethren. We're brothers and sisters in Christ and in the Lord. He's put us in his family. He's made us accepted in the beloved. And he's adopted us into his family. We be brethren. And, you know, in the ideal world and in the best of all cases, there should never be any strife among us here in the Lord's house. Do you know we've been exceptionally blessed here in recent years at Andrew Church for that to be true? We've been exceptionally blessed to not have to deal with strife here in the Lord's house. Now, I just ask you to don't take that for granted. Please don't ever take it for granted. Please continue praying that that would be the case, that God would continue to let us dwell in peace, and that anytime the church would meet, if somebody asked us for our condition, that we could report we're at peace. You just cannot assign a value or put a price on a church that's being at peace. Abraham says, we be brethren. He said, let's not have any strife between us. He says, you choose where you would like to go and to bring your cattle. Well, from the looks of things here, it looks like Lot didn't waste any time. He didn't think about it very long. He seemed like he hurried up and made a choice. Evidently, they must have been situated there on a high mount, somewhere they could see and look around. Because it says here that Lot lifted up his eyes, and he says, and he beheld all the plain of Jordan, and he says, it's very well watered. It was lush. And he says, he chose him that plain because it was so well watered. Now, I'll tell you what Lot did. Lot's thinking about his cattle business. The number one thought in Lot's mind is his cattle business. When Abraham says, look, we're too big, we need to separate, there's not enough room for our cattle, he says, which way do you want to go? Lot looks around and he sees this very fertile valley. Valleys are low. Usually there's a source of water. The Jordan River probably running through there. It's a lush valley. It gets plenty of rainfall. There's plenty of perfect pasture land to graze his cattle. Lot's got one thing in mind. That's the prosperity of his cattle business. But you see, here's the thing that he did, and this is what's key. Lot made a critical life decision based on the assumption that his prosperity is the main goal in life. You see that? He made this decision, and his main thought and his main goal in life is to be prosperous. So without giving any other thought or any other considerations, he chose this plain toward Sodom, and it says that he went over there. He pitched his tent toward Sodom. He says, I'm going to plant my stakes over here. I'm bringing my goods and belongings. This is where I'm going to live because my cattle will do the best. Well, I don't have to tell you very much about the city of Sodom for you Bible readers to know that that's not a good place to live. I think every one of you know what that city was famous for, a certain sin. We have probably almost every city in America today has laws on the books, or at least used to have laws on the books, saying that that particular sin is against the law. And people used to unanimously understand and believe that. Now, I think we've lived to the point in time now where man's become so corrupt that some of those laws have been taken off the books. But the city, just suffice it to say, was famous for this particular sin, whom God, in I think Leviticus chapter 13, describes this particular sin as a complete, total, utter abomination unto him. And so we know it's not a good place to live, but yet Lot made this choice, I'm going to live here. This is where I'm going to raise my family. This is where I'm going to have my business. I'm going towards Sodom. And if you study the life of Lot from this point forward, not only did his natural life suffer, but I'll tell you, his spiritual life suffered as well. And do you know that'll be the case for us today when we make critical life decisions and we don't take into account all the important things and the important inputs that we need to consider when we make these life decisions. We're subject to make a bad decision like Lot did, and this was the tipping point in his life. If you were graphing his life, I would say it was going up until the time that he separated from Abraham, and it tipped over, and it began to go down ever since. Now, you just read, if you're a Bible reader, and you read all of this story about Lot, you already know how this ends up. I'll tell you, it was not good. It was pathetic. This man made a horrible decision based on the fact that he wanted to be rich. And that was his number one goal in life. He says, I want to make a lot of money. I want to be successful. I want to have a lot of things. Now, you know, I don't knock people for wanting to be successful in life. I want to be successful in life. I want you to be successful in life. I want us all to succeed at life. I want us all to be comfortable. I want the Lord to bless us all and bless our families and bless us with our possessions and things and with good health. God wants to bless all of his people. You're his children and he loves you and he wants to bless you. But the problem comes in was when we began making these decisions, these critical life decisions, and we leave God out of it. There's where the major rift is, and there's where we're subject to go in the wrong direction, and you'll make a wrong turn at a key crossroads in life. That's exactly what Lot did. You know, it's funny, too. As you read down through here, this is how Lot does this. Abraham says, look around. He says, you just choose which way you'd like to go, and I'll just take my cattle. I'll go the other way. He says, let's just don't have any strife. That's what Abraham, that's the number one thing Abraham wanted. He didn't want to have strife with his brethren, with his nephew. So what's the first thing when Lot does? As you read down through here, you know what you're going to find? You're going to find Lot doing something that is a very recurring pattern in the scriptures for people who make poor decisions. It starts out like this. You can look in about verse 10, you're going to find Lot doing some looking. It says that he lifted up his eyes, and what's the first thing he do? He saw. The first thing he did, he saw the well-watered plains here of Jordan. So he saw, two verses later, he pitched his tent towards Sodom. Okay, now he's moving in that direction. He's getting a little bit closer. In chapter 14, you'll find him living in Sodom. And then later on in chapter 19, when God gets ready to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, you'll find Lot not only living in Sodom, but he's sitting at the gate of Sodom. He had worked himself very probably into the local government of Sodom, because that's where a lot of decisions were made for the city. That's where the court adjourned oftentimes. That's where the important leaders and elders of the city would go, is to the gate of the city. And that's where you find Lot when the two angels come walking up. So you see the progression. What did he do? First he saw, then he desired, and then he moved on it. Okay, and then the problems began to accumulate for this man, Lot. It started with his eyes. You might remember in Joshua chapter 7, there's another Bible character. There's a man named Achan over there. And you remember what he did when the Israelites were about to go into the city of Jericho and take the city of Jericho? One of the last things that God said to the Israelites was, don't you dare touch any of the spoil. Don't touch any of the silver and gold. It's cursed. He says, do not touch any of that stuff. Well, what do you think happened? They went in and they had this great victory. And then they came back. And then a short time after that, the army of Israel went to go conquer this little bitty small town called Ai. And what happened? They got their tail kicked and defeated. And they turned tail and ran, and they were embarrassed by defeat. And long story short, you know what happened? This man Achan had done exactly what God said don't do. And when they went into Jericho, he saw some of the silver and the gold. He saw some of the goodly Babylonish garments, some of the clothing that he liked. Maybe he saw some fashionable clothing that he liked, and he got a piece of that. He got some silver and gold, and he carried it back home with him, and he dug a hole in his tent, and he hid it in a hole in his tent, and he covered it up. Then he tried to act like nothing happened. But you know, the problem with sin is that you can't hide it from God. You might can hide it from men. You might can hide it from all your family members, but you're not going to ever hide it from God. And you know, in the end of that story, you go read that and see what happened. That man, God brought that man before all of Israel, and he was identified. He was called out, and God said, this is him. He's the one that did it. You know how his life ended up? First he saw, then he coveted, then he took, and then he tried to cover it up. That's this pattern that sin goes through so often in the Bible. There's another man who was plagued by the same pattern. You might remember him. His name was King David. Remember, he went out on top of his roof one day when the kings were all going out to war, and he should have been out there with them. He stayed home, and he went out on his roof, and he was looking around, and guess what he saw? He saw Bathsheba bathing. What did David do? He saw, he coveted, he took, and then he tried to cover it up, didn't he? That same four things, that same pattern. But you know what the problem was? It had the same result. He couldn't hide it from God. David couldn't hide what he had done from God, and God punished him for it. And guess what? There's another example of a critical life decision that somebody made that he paid for it the rest of his life. And not only did it affect David, it affected members of his household. Four of his own sons died after that. So sin has that ability. You see, sin is so far-reaching, it never just affects us only. It's always someone else that's touched by it. And the fallout from sin, it's like collateral damage, if you will. Sin is terrible. But here's Lot. What did he do? He saw, he coveted, and he says, I'm going there. And he took his cattle, and away he went. And you just see this little progression. First, he thinks, I'm going to live near Sodom because I'll have my cattle here. They'll be in the plain of Jordan. They got all this pasture. I'll just live near Sodom, and this will be good. The next thing you know, a chapter later, he's living in Sodom. Here's another principle in life that young people need to know. You can't ever think that you're going to live your life and get close to sin and you think you can avoid it and you won't participate in it, but you can just be close to it. I have a group of friends that are doing things that they don't have any business doing, and you know they shouldn't be doing it, and you know they shouldn't be living this way, but you want to be popular and you like to have their friendship, and so you say, well, I'll hang out with them, but I'll kind of stay out on the fringe. Don't ever think you can do that. You cannot stand next to the fire, so to speak, and not have the wind change and the smoke blow on you at some point. You're going to be affected by it. And the sin works like that. And so, you see, Lot thought he could live close to this terrible city called Sodom and have his run his cattle business and he'd get rich. But the next thing you know, he's sucked into the city and he's living there among these people. You just see the progression in this, don't you? As you study about Lot, here's how bad his life gets. So you see him going down. He's done tipped over. He's left Uncle Abraham. He was with a godly man and godly people. You know, in hindsight, you know what might have been a better choice? Well, certainly one thing would have been a better choice for Lot. He could have chose a different direction. If he'd have went in a different direction, it would have been better. I'm not saying it would have been the best, but it would have been better than the choice he made. Another choice he had was maybe he doesn't need to have so many cattle. Maybe he could figure out a way that maybe cattle is not going to allow me to stay with my family and stay with Uncle Abraham. Maybe there's something else in life that I can do and still maintain all my good godly relationships with my family. There's another choice he could have made. You see, he had plenty of choices. God always makes a way out, doesn't he? God always has a way to escape from temptations. Peter said that. But Lot didn't choose any of that. Lot made a poor choice. And as you look at his life, so eventually Lot ends up living in Sodom. He's done intermingled himself there. Now he's done found a wife at some point. I don't know where that he found his wife, but we can't really tell by the scriptures. But when the two angels come to destroy the city of Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot is married and he's got two daughters. Now there he is. Okay, here's where his life's come to now. He's living in Sodom, and this is a terrible place to live, by the way. What did the Bible say? It said, Abraham dwelled in the land of Canaan. Well, what a stark contrast. And Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and he pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. I'm talking about a terrible place to live. Now he's living in the city with them. Now he's worked his way up. He's some kind of a figure, a local government figure. He's sitting in the gate with the elders of the city there. God has had enough. God said the cries of the people have come up to me. He says, I'm going down there to see if all this is true. You remember there's a story where he met with Abraham and he told Abraham what he was going to do. And Abraham ended up bargaining with the Lord, starting with 50. And Abraham said, Lord, if there's 50 righteous people, when you get to Sodom, would you spare the city for the sake of the 50? And then he bargained all the way down to 10. And finally, the Lord agreed and says, if I find 10 righteous people in this city, I'll spare the whole city. Well, you know God burned the city up with fire and brimstone. He literally incinerated the city of Sodom and Gomorrah. And so we know for a fact that there's less than 10 righteous people in the entire city. That's how bad it was. But there's Lot trying to live right in the middle of them. He's even part of them. Now he's done moved in and he's become friendly. Maybe he's part of the government somehow. Maybe he occupies a position. But you see that, but then later on the Lord comes and God, because of Abraham, it says, and the scripture says later on a few chapters down, it says, God remembered Abraham and therefore he went and he saved Lot. You can read that. I don't know if Lot would have even survived this if it were not for his association with Abraham. But God comes and he destroys the city. He incinerates the city. He saves Lot and his wife and two daughters. And those two daughters were married. I'll tell you, this is how bad Lot's life began to be. Lot he's married and he has two daughters. And it says that his two daughters were married. But yet I believe they were married to people that were committing the same sins of the city. And so it was terrible. And so whenever this thing is over and God destroys that city, he takes Lot and the two daughters and the wife and they head out. And you know the wife, she turned around, disobeyed God, the angel's words. She turned around to look to see what's happening and she turned into a pillar of salt. So now you just got Lot and his two daughters. And if you read far enough, you read to the end of this, Lot ends up living in a cave on top of a mountain there with only his two daughters left, getting drunk and committing incest. And this is real. I mean, this is a Bible account of what happened. This is how low this man's life went. And it says that the children that were born as a result of that incestuous relationship were the founders of the people of the Moabites and the Ammonites, which were both perennial enemies of the nation of Israel. Nothing good whatsoever came out of Lot's life. When he left Uncle Abraham, he started downhill and he ended all the way in the bottom. It was terrible. But what did he do? It was about his decision, wasn't it? Now here's the other thing. This is not like Lot is some unregenerate person and doesn't know better. Lot was a child of God. A child of God ended up in that pitiful of a situation in a cave on top of a mountain. He was a child of God. You say, well, how do you know that? Because the Bible tells me that he was. When I go to 2 Peter, I turn over to 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 6. This is what I read. Peter said, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, God condemned them with an overthrow, making them an ensample unto those that after should live ungodly. Why did God incinerate Sodom and Gomorrah? Because he said, I'm going to make an example for other people who decide they want to live like this and they want to follow this lifestyle. I'm going to give an example. I'm going to incinerate the whole city. And he did. And Peter's writing about this. Peter knows why God did it. And he says, he made an ensample unto them that should after live ungodly. And he delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. And in verse 8, and parenthetically, it says this about Lot. It says, for that righteous man, you see, Lot was righteous. He's a child of God. He says, for that righteous man dwelling among them in seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. And then Peter would go on to say in the next verse that the Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished. What did it say about Lot? What did Peter say about it? You remember Lot's pattern? First he saw, then he moved a little bit toward Sodom, and then he got into the city. Now he's living there. And what does Peter say about Lot's life? It said he vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds, their ungodly and unlawful deeds. Lot had to see this. He was living among a bunch of sinful people. A whole city of people, of almost the whole city, was unregenerate. I don't know how many were. I know all I can tell you is that Lot was a child of God. I can tell you that much for sure because the Bible told me that. Almost the entire city were wicked, unregenerate, ungodly people. And Lot chose to live among that so his cattle can prosper and I can make a lot of money. I'll tell you, not only did his natural life suffer, but his spiritual life suffered. How would you like to make a choice in life? And maybe it could be like, or who am I going to marry and where am I going to live? Or what type of a job am I going to choose? What type of career am I going to have? Where am I going to live and establish my family? How would you like to make a choice like that and then the rest of your life have your soul be vexed? Vexed means to be troubled. It means to be heavily burdened and troubled. How would you like to have your soul vexed every day, from day to day? That's all. You wake up and it's the same thing tomorrow as it was today, and it's the same thing the next day. All I see, every direction I look in, every person I meet, is nothing but sin. Wicked, wicked sinners. And here I am, I'm living here, my wife and my two daughters and my two wicked son-in-laws. You see, when the angels told Lot to get your family together and get out of the town because I'm about to destroy it, it said Lot had to go outside to talk to his two son-in-laws. Why? Because they were not with the daughters. They were sodomites just like the rest of them. He had to go outside, try to tell them, come on, the Lord's going to destroy this place. But the Bible says that it seemed as if it didn't make sense to them, and they just refused to come. And so they stayed there and they got burned up, the two son-in-laws. But vexing his righteous soul from day to day. I'll tell you now, you have to admit, that was a poor decision that he made. I'm going to take my cattle and I'm going to live in Sodom. I see a well-watered plain down here. That's a lot of lush pasture land. And I would like to make a lot of money with my cows. But oh, did it cost him. What was the price for all that? You see, you and I can run into issues in our life when we come to major life decisions and we come to these crossroads in life. There's some choices that have consequences that can bear to play on you for the rest of your life. You know one thing we ought to be doing? If you ask me, we ought to, number one, above all things, we ought to be making choices that value fellowship and worship with God above all else. That needs to be number one. I mean, in every case, in every situation, for every one of us, for our children, for our friends, for our family members, number one, we need to make choices in life that place a high value and a high priority on our fellowship and our worship of our God. Abraham says, okay, you want the well-watered plains of Sodom? I'll just stay here in Canaan's land. You know what Lot did? He left Canaan's land to go to Sodom. He was already in Canaan's land. And to the world, Canaan's land might look like a dry and dusty place. You see? But the Bible says it was a place that was flowing with milk and honey. It's a place where God chose to give to his people some of the choicest gifts that there are. And what do we find Abraham doing? When Lot took his cattle and he went away from his very God-fearing uncle Abraham, I don't know that he ever worshipped another day in his life. It never says one thing about Lot ever worshipping. Never. But you know what it says about Abraham? You can read several times it says Abraham stopped and he built an altar towards God. Abraham's in dry, dusty Canaan, but what is he doing? He's worshiping God first. He'll stop and he'll build an altar and he'll worship God. And God was blessing him all along. In fact, right after Lot left, it says that the Lord came right back to Abraham in verse 14, right after Lot was separated. And he told Abraham to lift up your eyes and you look around in all directions here for the land which thou seest, because to thee will I give it and to thy seed forever, and I'll make your seed as the dust of the earth so that no man can number it. Thy seed is going to be that way. He says, arise and walk through the land in the length of it and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Abraham's making altars to God. He's worshiping God. He's putting God number one in his life. Lot's doing just the opposite, and he's going downhill exponentially. You see the stark contrast? We are to do that. We are to give consideration to our relationships when we make decisions in life. You see, because our relationships are important. Abraham said, even though he obviously had the right, he could have chose any direction or any land that he wanted. He offered it to his nephew first, and he says, no, you choose first. He says, for we be brethren. We be brethren. Abraham was that kind to his little nephew. He says, we be brethren, and there shouldn't be any strife. You and I, we'd be doing well if we could always try to keep our relationships with others in mind as we make choices in life. I could tell you some stories this morning. You know, Elder Ricky Myers, he's a big storyteller. I could tell you some stories about people who made choices in life, and when they did, their life was a tipping point, and it tipped over, and it only went downhill from there. There was a man that used to be a member at Mount Olive Church in Alabama. It's one Elder David Guthrie used to pastor. There was a man used to be a member there. I think he may have been a deacon. I know he was a song leader. But he just up and decided, I'm leaving my family one day. I don't want any of the godly life anymore. I'm leaving my family. I'm taking off. I'm going to New York. In fact, I'm going to take up this lifestyle that was famous in the city of Sodom. And he did all that. I'll tell you what, he was gone about exactly 1 year, and he came back in a casket. It was very, very sad. I could tell you about a couple of more that lasted a few more years longer than that, but they made decisions. I'm going to leave my family. I'm going to leave all those that know me. I'm going to leave all those that love me. Everything I've ever done that was good, I'm leaving that behind because I want to go and live a sinful lifestyle now. And it was the tipping point, those decisions, and they ended up there somewhere. A lot of them were 6 foot under the ground. So you can see the effects when the Bible says that the end result of sin is death. It's telling you the truth. There's so many decisions to be made in life where we just need to remember that God needs to be first in our life. I hope that our young people will always remember that. There's a lot of things that, you know, people today would encourage you to consider when you make decisions in life, especially about like who you're going to marry, what kind of career am I going to have, where am I going to choose to live. I'll tell you, when Lot left Abraham, I believe he starved to death spiritually the rest of his life. He literally starved to death. Oh, he lived. Yeah, he lived. But we see the evidence. We see the facts of his life and how he went downhill. You can live, but you might be vexing your righteous soul from day to day, depending on your choices. Isn't that something, though, how important these choices in life are? I just encourage all of our young people to consider these things. Consider these Bible examples that God has placed in here. It's very easy when we, in hindsight, we look back and we read the account of a man named Lot. We see how his life went. It's very easy for you and us to see, well, gee, did he make a wrong and a bad decision? It's terrible. And wow, did it affect him and his family? It sure did. I hope the Lord will bless you with wisdom. You know, James says, if any man lack wisdom, what does he say? Let him ask of God who giveth liberally. We need to be praying for wisdom for each other, don't we? You know, one other thing I want you to always do, I'd love if you could do it, is always remember our relationships here in the Lord's house and how important they are and how beautiful they are. For we be brethren. We be brethren here, brothers and sisters in the Lord, and our relationships here, we should never have any strife among us. And I pray that when any issue comes up and confronts us here as a church family and as a church body, I pray the Lord would give us the knowledge and the spirit of grace and the spirit of wisdom to be able to deal with it in appropriate ways so we always maintain our good fellowship. May God bless and keep each of you.